You are listening to the Green Lantern Spotlight Podcast, episode 47 for March 2010.
To find my place, I'm guarding 2814. I don't know why it's chosen me. From the corner of my eye, I catch a glimpse of evil light.
And now, the host of the Green Lantern Spotlight Podcast, Frankie Mateo.
Welcome to today's rendition of the GL Spotlight, the premier locale for all your Green Lantern related news, rumors, and reviews. Today we bring you our fully loaded thoughts on the topic of GL in televised media, as well as our spoilerish thoughts on the early final draft of the much-anticipated Green Lantern movie stated for mid-2011. I am, of course, your often well-prepared host, Frankie Mateo. And joining me today are Brandon West, the co-webmaster of the website speechersite.proboards.com. Brandon?
Hi.
We also have Kuhan, the creator of the Real View Mirror podcast. Kuhan?
No, what? Huh?
As well as our ever-present, generally likable member, Musard.
Yeah, motherfucker.
And our hardened by his general knowledge of comic culture member, Eric Cahill. Eric?
Hey, I'm Eric, and I'm good at everything.
with your Dennis Lewis sound ass.
Yeah. Welcome, everybody. Today, as mentioned, we'll be getting into Green Lantern in the medium, which he has oftentimes been neglected, such as his early days in the Adventures of Super Friends and the Challenges of the Super Friends. Or at times when he has shined in his brightest, as in the acclaimed animated series by creator Bruce Timm, Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. To arguably terrific / abysmal roles as in Justice League New Frontier and Green Lantern First Flight. Whether the character has been casted in a supporting role or given way for his own feature film, we seem to be given our fair dose of the Emerald War in recent years. Hence why we're going to focus on his most recent appearances in the last few months, beginning with the short cameo in Absolute Justice. Absolute Justice recently aired on the 5th of February 2010 and was the first of what could be called a televised movie event for a currently ongoing series Smallville, which showcased the adventures of a young Clark Kent. Now we only really got a glimpse of Alan Scott, the Green Lantern of the 1940s in Absolute Justice, but for the character that had been stated to not actually appear in the movie by Green Lantern's own writer Geoff Johns, had to have meant something, am I right? Or am I just hoping for much more here?
Well, I mean, I guess they had to, it was kind of disappointing to me because, I mean, my problem with it is that he had his battery was still in the headquarters. I guess for years and years and years after nobody was there anymore. So I guess, you know, this ultimate weapon was just kind of hanging out, you know.
Well, I mean,
and obviously they left it very vague as to what?
I was just going to say that technically it's not abandoned.
Because once in a while it's dusted.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Hawkman's still there hanging out.
And Dr. Fate probably talks to it.
Well, I thought Hawkman had some kind of line of dialogue where he hasn't actually been there that often. And everything's all mothballed and had, like, stuff on it. I guess he was a caretaker. What kind of that's my problem with it. I don't understand. I guess it obviously spits in the face of Smallville continuity if you follow Smallville. But what kind of secret group that was under the radar were they when they wore those ridiculous costumes and had a big-ass clubhouse in the middle of the city with a big table that said, this is the secret clubhouse on it, you know? And when they all retired, they put all their crazy super-secret shit in big glass cases around the giant table that said, this is our secret funhouse, you know?
Because Geoff Johns says so.
It's true. I mean, to showcase the most powerful weapon in the universe, yeah, the most powerful weapon in the universe by, you know, 1940 standards in this giant secret clubhouse of the ever-present, ever-brightly colored Justice Society of America was pretty weird.
Well, you know what I wonder? I'll mute because you have a strong opinion about this kind of thing. If you actually cut the Green Lantern out of it completely, like if they didn't even have Green Lantern in it, I mean, would that have really bothered you that much?
Nope.
Actually, I'd have liked to see him actually show up at some point using his ring.
I think it bothered me that he did show up and didn't do anything. Like, we saw him for like 3 seconds and he did absolutely nothing.
We saw him in jail. Like,
yeah.
Taking a photo.
Well, they can't use him more or less, right? The idea being that DC had embargo controlling rights on certain characters and they don't want to oversaturate the media And that's why you'll never see Hal Jordan on Smallville. That's why you never see Batman on Smallville or something like that. But you got to see a second of it. And I think the argument was like, well, we'll give you half a second. That way it'll be kind of satisfied. Well, I don't know. I mean, I've seen that ring at conventions. I can buy it. You know, I've seen that lantern advertised on websites. I can look at that there. I didn't really need to see it in Smallville if it's not going to do anything. So.
Did you guys...
the possibility that might just be a model or a representation.
Muzard, what were you saying?
Yeah.
Like I was saying, what I was saying is likely the possibility is that he actually kept the battery some safe place and not having a representation, they might have just made a model because for somehow I don't actually see him giving that thing up and just leaving it in the middle of a museum or something, just break it and rob it.
You know, that actually makes a lot more sense than it's there.
I mean, that happens in the Silver Age and Golden Age. People did crazy shit like that. It's 2010. I hope people don't really just – I think it's hilarious that they're imagining Hawkman, like, cursing to himself and saying how much he hates the government under his breath as he's carving Alan Scott's battery out of, like, some plasticine.
Didn't you guys find it annoying that the mask was green instead of purple? Yeah.
I find it highly annoying that you actually said that.
That was the joke.
Actually, I want to hear from Wes, because I'm here from Wes's opinion from here. Well, what's your opinion actually Alan Scott in Absolute Justice, even for half a second or like 2 seconds into the film? I mean, not for the film itself, but, you know, his representation in the actual in the movie itself.
Wait.
From what we saw, I enjoyed. I remember watching it and seeing Jay up there and Alan, and then thinking, oh, this is neat, because, I mean, I knew they were going to show up in some capacity. I just didn't know how much we were going to get.
No, it's funny because, you know, again, Jeff Johns stated himself that they were going to have no role in this thing. I mean, they sure didn't really have a role, but it got interpreted as they weren't even going to be in the film at all.
Yeah, it's something, and... You know, it's not the greatest thing in the world, but a cameo is a cameo, and it was a good cameo, at least for me. Hey, I would have been fine just seeing Alan Scott on a piece of paper, and that's what we got. So I can't really complain. I mean, sure, there's aspects of it that don't make the greatest of sense, or like Kuan said, with the mask, it's not the most logical or most faithful, but... It's all right.
Well, generally across the board, we pretty much enjoyed it then, I guess.
I don't know.
I mean for what it was, not for the movie itself, but for the was that it was more, again, mainly, I do agree with you, Eric, before that you mentioned that it's more like a fan-made film.
Yeah.
And it's a fan-made film that adhered to our liking of Green Lantern. And when, you know what, we're going to give you a small cameo of a character that's, if in truth was actually represented in the film more, we probably would have disliked.
My problem with it is that it ends up being a big, and obviously it's not just to seem, I mean, obviously it's stupid to think that it isn't this, but a big, like, marketing push, because there's no way we're going to see Green Lantern ever show up on the show. It's not a suggestion of the character returning. We're not going to see Green Alan Scott in this continuity, quote unquote, ever. So it's really just kind of saying, like, oh, here you go. Something that doesn't really make any sense out of context, you know. And that was my problem with the whole movie, that there was too much continuity. And Jeff Johns had gone on record and saying, you know, he thinks this is possibly the only representation of the JSA we'd ever get in live action. So we might as well throw everything on there. But the whole thing ended up being, like, a complete mess. And, I mean, they were in, like, Power Ranger costumes. I mean, half the shit they were saying was just Hawkman wait till, like, minute, like, 63 to start talking about that he's a reincarnation of an Egyptian warrior. And that's all accurate to the character, but... Who the fuck cares as you're watching the episode? I mean, that's kind of the problem with the story, that it wasn't a story. It was just a bunch of cameos and stuff, and that kind of bothered me, I guess.
Aren't you a bit more bothered by the fact that Sandman got killed?
Yeah, well, that really – I mean, maybe it's my personal problem because Sandman is my favorite. But I just think, again, I think we deserve – I mean, I think you deserve more if these characters are going to show up. I think you should get something of significance, you know, in the show, as opposed to – you know, just, I don't know, what we saw, which is just kind of like winks and nods. And that's fine, winks and nods. I mean, they do that on Smallville all the time, but a 2-hour movie devoted to just winks and nods, you know? And plus, fuck that noise that Icicle was the fucking main villain. I mean, what the hell? I mean, there's nobody else in the JSA's history they could have thrown up there. I mean, Wardrew, doesn't he just have like a goatee? Just put a fucking goatee on a guy and give him lightning bolts, and he's a more credible threat.
Seriously, Mordru's like the guy who holds all of the magic in the universe at the point of the 31st century. He'd be a great threat.
Yeah. It would have been a more satisfactory threat to the Justice Society rather than Kid Blue over there.
Yeah, hell, Vandal Savage would have been better than him.
Yeah,
well, exactly. Well, we sort of got a representation of him in Smallville in general, but that's exactly. But that's for something else.
But yeah. You get my point.
Yeah, I get your point. I get your point a great deal.
Yeah.
But let's actually move on from a small cameo, per se, to an actually a bigger portrayal in Batman the Brave and the Bold, which actually, you know, the big brainchild of the Cartoon Network and James Tucker. The show being lighter in, you know, in its tone for like shows that came before it, actually has a better ability to promote the universe of the DCAU, especially, you know, in showing the deeper history of the Green Lantern Corps than other shows have done in the past. Actually, showcasing a larger cast of the Green Lantern Corps rather than small snippets we've seen here and there. I actually enjoy the show for what it is, and actually enjoy. Its representation of most characters that actually brings into the show itself, and seeing the core actually be more of a core than I saw in previous shows like in Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, it's good even if it's in its lighthearted humor.
Well, what do you think? I mean, I think what's most interesting about the Brave and the Bold episodes that the Green Lantern Corps shows up, and I think there's about four of them, is that Guy Gardner is a featured character. And initially I thought it was because, you know, again, of embargo, and they want to keep Hal Jordan under control because they're doing movies and stuff about him. But then Hal Jordan shows up in an episode.
Yeah, he showed up twice, actually.
Yeah, right, in extended cameos, and then he kind of just goes off. And what's funny is that he hides in Batman's ring the entire episode, because that makes any sense to what was going on in the story. And they also subvert the whole storyline. I mean, they bring in the Sinestro storyline where he's around, and he's a badass, and he's the best Green Lantern, but he kind of turns against everybody for, you know, the sake of argument. And in the Brave and the Bold twist, Guy Gardner is the one who has to kind of go up against him. So I think it's pretty interesting that they use Guy Gardner instead of Hal. And I think that really speaks more to the show is limited and they want these kind of character archetypes. And the easiest archetype for Batman in his history is Guy Gardner because they hate each other. And it's easier to write them as hating each other than trying to write Hal.
Yeah, I actually agree with you to a point there. I mean, Mew, what do you think about the show?
I actually like the show. I kind of like that they take kind of like a feel that kind of feels like the 90s show meets the 60s show. It's not completely serious, but it's not completely camp either. It's got this kind of nice mixture and spirit about it I like.
Yeah.
You get your occasional like silly whips from them, and of course you get to see Guy, and Guy's always fun. You see a little bit of Hal. Yeah. But I was surprised they didn't actually show Alan despite showing both Guy and Hal.
It's true, even though they had an easy end with a Justice Society episode, in fact.
I'm sure they'll work him in at some point. I mean, because you fucking commandy, for God's sake.
He wasn't shown in any of the things, though. Not even in the flashback. There was the Flash. But not.
Well, then once you get into good, that's the whole thing. And again, we'll get into the layer of the script. I think that's the whole thing with Alan Scott in the history of the DCU. It is kind of hard to talk about Alan Scott when you're talking about Green Lantern because it's such a franchise and a concept in and of itself. And Alan Scott's so bizarre in the Star Heart. And for a while, it was just a coincidence, you know, and then it was kind of retconned to be more logical, and I think they probably just realized it's kind of a stopgap for them. Plus, they did a couple of really strong Green Lantern core episodes, and I guess they didn't want to take away from that concept too much. I think the Reach episode was really cool.
Yeah, I was going to mention the Reach episode was actually very good. You know, showcased more of Oa, more of the Green Lantern being a force.
Yeah, military force. That was very cool.
Which episode was that?
That was the episode where Blue Beetle had been reprogrammed against his will to follow his own programming to destroy the Green Lantern Corps.
It was called Revenge of the Reach or something?
Yeah, the Revenge of the Reach.
Yeah. Wasn't that the most recent storyline in Blue Beetle backups?
That was actually a storyline in the Blue Beetle and the Blue Beetle story arc. It's still story itself, not a backup.
Well, that's what the first time, I think Blue Beetle's first issue, he gets into a fight with Guy Gardner because Guy Gardner's ring is like instinctually angry at the Reach technology.
Well, no,
pretty cool that they brought something so modern into.
But actually, like in the backups recently, there was a plot where like the Reach like totally reprogrammed him to fight everybody.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense.
I mean, that's technically been going on for Blue Beetle storyline in general. But
it's been
at least two issues in fighting Gardner. There's been at least the storyline during Sinestro Corps War, where he actually had to wait the Reach program that guy he was following at the time. I forget who it was.
Peacemaker.
What was his name again? Hunter Killer.
Peacemaker, right?
Rip Hunter.
Yeah, Rip Hunter. The time.
Rip, no, not Rip Hunter.
Peacemaker.
I'm talking about the guy who
Peacemaker.
And made him into one of the Reach agents and had him fight each other.
I think it's interesting too because the plot of the it's funny because the two major Green Lantern episodes, the two featured episodes, are the Despero one and the Reach one. Both of them kind of centered on Green Lantern, kind of them being some shitty shit going on.
Mm-hmm.
The Reach episode had to do with the fact that the Guardians kind of like pissed off this society that is like thousands of years old, and they pretty much like wiped them out, and they wanted revenge, and kind of pointing out how grimy the Guardians are, which is a popular story for Green Lantern stuff. And as we see in Emerald Dawn, back to what's going on today with Blackest Night, that's pretty popular. And, you know, the Despero episode was all about how the greatest Green Lantern ever turned to be a total dickhead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what's how do you rate most of these episodes, Green Lantern-centric, Brave and the Bold episodes?
For the most part, I liked it. You know, it's kiddie. You know, it's a cartoon. It's what cartoons are supposed to be, but... You know, Green Lantern related, it did the job well. The like Eric said, the Sinestro turn thing, it was okay. It was a bit forced and predictable for us.
Yeah.
But a kid watching that probably would love the hell out of that.
His voice, my God.
Yeah.
You would fall in love with that Sinestro voice.
I think
I actually did. We dated for like a week. Just
I'm glad Kuan has finally said it.
Me and his voice.
What's
thank you, Kuan. Speaking of voices, I think Guy's voice or personality rather in the show is just more natural to use and easier to use than John or Hal. Because you know, you've already got that anger aspect, and even though he's new to the show, there's that history that he and Batman have.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised that they use him a lot more often than Hal or the 3,600 other Lantern,
72
or whatever.
Yeah,
I mean, it's interesting because normally you'd assume that a company like DC would be more interested in kind of like
diversifying.
No, not even. I would say not diversifying, punking out like a pimping out their like cash cow character. Hal Jordan trying to get to see if they could build that character up. Where the producers probably said that's probably a better idea if we use this character. You saw that in the JLU. The JLU featured characters like Vigilante and had like three episodes about him, and you're like, what the fuck am I
doing? and again, it's James Tucker who's like, producing this show.
So exactly.
He has a bigger stake in, actually promoting other characters that most people aren't familiar with.
I mean, honestly, the whole idea that a Legion of Superheroes cartoon existed at all.
Yes.
It's testament to the fact that James Tucker must love them, because there's no way. That's always been a kind of existing franchise that could be profitable, but it's never quite profitable enough, and it's weird that they just decided to kind of like, no, instead of doing, another Batman cartoon, which would make $1 billion like Brave and the Bold has, we're going to do something that probably will never work and kind of stick Superman in the peripheral. I think that you do see that there's a certain amount of like character awareness, and at least the DC animated, they're realizing like, we can really diversify and branch out and stuff like that. Well, that's pretty cool.
To be fair, they did do a lot of Batman series. I mean, there was Batman Animated Series.
Yeah.
There was Batman Dawn. There was The Batman.
It's true. The Batman, again, there's no denying that. But, Eric is pointing out the fact that, he tried something that probably wasn't going to succeed and did it, rather than just creating the next Batman series, which he eventually did.
Yeah. Well, something like Brave and the Bold is great. I mean, really, versus something like Absolute Justice, which was nothing but cameos. But that's what the Brave and the Bold show is. But it doesn't really pretend to be anything. It doesn't need to have any kind of internal consistency. I'm never going to see Omek on TV except in Brave and the Bold.
True.
I might never see Kamani again, in living motion, living motion, drawn motion or whatever, except in Brave and the Bold.
In living color.
That's insane shit to me. That's awesome. Yeah, exactly. That's great. I mean, Jonah Hex fighting Mongol. I mean, for fuck's sake, like, that's awesome. I'm sorry, and that's great that I got to see that actually happen. So, science bless the Brave and the Bold.
I'm still waiting for an appearance from the Fourth World.
I know, how amazing would that be? I would cry.
Darkseid versus Batman in the fist fight.
I mean,
and then Batman gets stuck in time.
I mean, didn't we get Steppenwolf for that Mongol episode?
Yeah,
Lashina from the Furies. Yeah, we got a few Fourth World characters.
Mongol,
I'm talking about the big guns. I'm talking about
I'm more than like guessing they're probably easier way into it.
Maybe we can talk, since they did a Legion of Superheroes cartoon, maybe we can talk them into doing an ill-fated New Gods cartoon, you know? Let that run for like 13 episodes and then cancel that. I'd love that.
At least a season and a half.
That would not make a season and a half.
Jake Sucker planned for at least 3 seasons. Got 2 out of them.
Here's what we do. We win the lottery and we fund the entire 4-volume set to be made exactly as is into a cartoon, even if it fails.
I'll just do you guys, because I don't really feel like reading any of the Shia Norman stuff ever again, or the Jimmy Olsen stuff ever again.
Yes, yeah. We need to have Superman try to talk 70 slang.
While popping and jiving to Kryptonian music.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, I want to say it though on the record, I don't necessarily think, I mean, Hal Jordan is a character with a lot of history, and he does have personality, he just hasn't had in the last, like, 10 years. I think I really liked First Flight. I think he wasn't in it as much as he really could have been. But even that movie kind of showed that you can skew the character to having a personality, and I think he can really carry. So I don't necessarily believe that it's impossible to have a Hal Jordan be someone that Batman can hang out with. But, you know, I do think, yeah, I think West, what we were saying, yeah, it's he is easier, and he does make more sense to foil to the Batman character. Yeah.
Well, when you're working with animated characters, that's all you're going to get. You're going to get the most basic representation of these adaptations, and you're going to get these one-note characters. And like Bruce Timm's Batman, we got to see a lot of character development, but most of that was because they knew it was going to be on the air for a long time. This is the guy who's going to be in every episode. So when we get cameos of Hal, you gotta stick the character right there in people's faces. Why should I like Hal? Why should he matter? And why should I continue watching this episode? You can't find much of a reason to put Hal in that place with Batman, but whereas you can do that with Guy. You can create that friction, and it leads to opportunities to use other people like Kilowog and Hal Jordan who make great scenes. Yeah. So now, after watching that episode, you'll say, oh, who's that guy who stood up all alone? Who was the only Green Lantern not to be blown away?
Who chicken shitted out and hit everybody in a ring and threw away. Spend the whole episode being like, I think Batman will solve this. Let's fuck off. Like, what? That's a lot of assumption to make, but whatever. No, I think that's actually part of what we can talk about when we transition, especially if we're going to talk about Crisis on Two Earths.
Well, actually, that's what I want to transition to, seeing that his being, yes, the character being not represented that much in Brave and the Bold to a movie that doesn't really represent him that well. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, Crisis of Two Earths. Being, you know, again, directed by Laura Montgomery, seeing, you know, she is a talented director, has done great works with, like, Wonder Woman. And being done by, again, producer freaking Bruce Timm, who, again, does great work with, you know, Justice League Unlimited and Batman, the animated series. And being, again, based off of a story, which was successful for his most part, you know, being written by Grant Morrison. The movie itself felt, especially the character itself, of Green Lantern itself, felt very underwhelmed for me.
Yeah. Well, they could have really just stuck John Stewart in there and changed one or two lines of dialogue.
They could have. Well, they didn't. And I just don't know. Is the character...
Because then there'd be another generation of kids being, isn't the Green Lantern black?
Well, I think that's my thing with it. Obviously, the script was written as a JLE script, and then they tweaked, like maybe 3.5 lines to make it not a JLU script. And it still very much so works as a JLU script. But my thing with it is the way they represent Hal and that, even the way they represent Hal and that is actually kind of inaccurate, because they're always saying stuff like Hal's a space cop in the comics because it's just a cool way to talk about the Green Lanterns. But Hal himself as a character has always been the antithesis of the space cop. I mean, he's never been about, like, law and order. He's always been about, like, shoot from the hip. So maybe the one telling line of dialogue he has in the movie is when they have the roundtable discussion, and he's one of the people that's against going to help everybody because he's like, oh, I'm a cop, and there's jurisdiction, and this is over my head. And it's kind of like, wow, that's kind of a weak-ass thing to say. But I think they're trying to represent his character as distinctly as they can. And that really isn't an accurate representation of Hal Jordan. I mean, I don't, like, not that I love the guy, but that's not really who he is.
He's all but breaking the rules.
He should, exactly. He should be like, yeah, let's fucking go. Why the fuck not? Why, I got this crazy-ass thing on my finger. Let's get over there, you know?
Yeah, it's weird. He says, I'm just a beat cop, and I'm only supposed to represent my jurisdiction.
Yeah, I mean, that actually makes more sense for John Stewart's character to say, at least in the context of JLU, because you could always say, you know, I'm used to order, I'm used to rigid, I'm used to a command structure, I used to be in the Marines. I don't think we should get in. I think that this is a foreign conflict, blah, blah. It makes more sense for him to put it in terms of militarily. And even him saying something like, I'm a space cop, sounds like something he'd say. It just doesn't really feel like a Hal thing to say. I mean, you know, what I did like, though, again, not really liking Hal that much. I liked how Captain Marvel Jr. completely destroyed him. But that one bit with the fight was pretty good, because the constructs he made as he was trying to make continuously more difficult things for him to break through, which is funny to me because I feel like a construct is always a construct. If you make it of a glass jar, it's going to be just as strong as a brick wall construct. So there's no reason to make like a steel sheet, then a castle, then a spaceship. I mean, it's all going to be just as thick as each other, but I guess he was panicked.
It's symbolic.
Yeah, I guess he was just freaking out. He's like, oh no. Yeah.
Here's the thing. I mean, freaking Hal Jordan loses to him, Captain Marvel Jr., whatever, for his everyday man thing. Batman in a construction robot does some damage that even Hal couldn't do.
Well, that's obviously because he's Batman.
I mean, he's Batman. Of course, yeah. Batman will do whatever it takes and probably defeat half the villains that he'll run into with a giant mecha.
Yeah, plus he was using the power loader from Aliens, and that's an awesome piece of machinery, so I wouldn't want to fuck with that. But, yeah, no, I think you're right. I think Hal got kind of jacked in it, if you really want to look at it that way. And even the scenes where he featured, I mean, especially him versus Power Ring, you get, again, two guys with it feels like the animated guys were like, you know, we've seen guys with Power Rings fight before, so let's not bother this time. It's like, well, no, you should still bother. I mean, I'm still paying money to see, you should still bother.
I think the fact that that this was clearly a ripoff of Earth 2 and a JLU script at the same time really brought down the movie. And from a Hal's perspective, it's not so much that it could have been John saying those lines. It's the fact that, once again, you have so little time to put a character's personality right there for me to care about you, and they failed. Like, you could have gave them no lines at all, and I would have cared more.
You could have had him say something like, wahoo, like, let's fucking do it, and then I would have been like, wow, that's an awesome guy, and that's all I would have needed. You know, to give me the character they gave me is kind of like a...
It feels like it's just bland. It's bland for Hal. It's bland for anybody. Had that been Kyle, I would say, oh, well, that's boring. It was the wrong time to throw Hal in there. And I guess from a financial statement, it was like, okay, we just came off a first flight. He needs to be here front and center. Green Lantern is at an all-time high in popularity, this, and this. But then you give him virtually nothing to roll with, so it defeats the purpose of putting him in there in the first place. It's basically like throwing John Stewart into the Justice League. Why did you do it? Because of the color of his skin, not because of his personality.
Well, luckily his personality ended up being strong enough that he kind of was able to feature on the show, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think, probably writing, he became more than just the black guy.
Yeah, well, I think this kind of goes again into what we were talking about with Green Lantern is a really strong concept. There's billions of characters. You can do almost anything you want with it. They keep coming back to Hal because what I'm saying, I'm surprised on Brave and the Bold they didn't, is because it's kind of just like who they think they should be pushing as the character. Especially, I mean, I think in JLU, they wanted to use Hal. They did. They just decided to use Green Lantern because they wanted to be more, you know, they want to have a broader demographic, and that's totally cool. They even used Hal, I think, in one of the Once in Future thing. For a second, John turns into Hal when reality changes, and there's like a joke where it's somebody else's voice, and he goes, I'm Hal Jordan, I understand, I'm up to speed, carry on.
I've been briefed or something like that.
It's very funny, you know, and that's basically what this amounts to here. Like, oh, it's cool to see Hal, and it's okay, it's still cool to see Hal, but that's really all we need. You know,
you make up your mind.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's fine. Like I said, I actually would have preferred Hal-iness there. Because again, First Flight, I think, does make the point to make his personality. That's Hal. It's Hal written as by like a Hollywood screenwriter, but that's Hal. You know, that's who he is. And I think as much as First Flight was obviously about Sinestro and not about Hal, I think you did get a sense of the character in that. So it would have been nice to see a little bit of that happening. Mm-hmm. And why don't they do a movie that links all these disparate movies together? You know, like, I mean, get the Wonder Woman woman to make take all the Batman movie they made and the Superman movies they made and make it all, get all the voice actors back and say this is a sequel to all of them. I mean,
that would make too much sense.
You get a little like
It's probably kind of difficult to get the actors together, but come on, really? No, that would make way too much sense.
It would cost a lot, but a lot of the voice actors they use are used. Or I don't think Christopher Maloney is like, all right, if you want me to play Hal again, I need $1 million. I mean, he's probably going to – they probably ask Chris Maloney to do a voice in Brave and the Bold. He'd be like, sure, the same amount of money he'd get paid to do First Flight. Well, so I don't really think it's that big.
Not even a financial thing. It might just be Christopher saying, oh, well, I had a whole hour to myself. Why would I come back for – 6 lines in a movie,
you know,
and my character doesn't even do shit.
That's you anticipating it being the same movie.
I don't disagree that that's necessarily true. That, you know, there might be a certain amount of like pettiness and then and just like featureness, whatever. But in all fairness, the JLU has had actors and stuff on there that have been on the show for like 3 lines. You know, I mean, Nathan Fillion, when he was doing Vigilante, did like 2 lines in like 6 episodes, and then he eventually got a whole episode to himself. Under no contractual obligation did he do so. They were just like, well, you want to come back and do the voice? He's like, yeah, sure. Michael Rosenbaum came on, did 3 lines for Deadshot, and that was it, you know? I mean, so you do get, and then, you know, I mean, he also did obviously Flash and stuff. So.
Like, he worked.
No, I mean, it's the thing, like, the idea being that, you know, I think they get cast members that they don't necessarily aren't featured. I mean, every time they do one of these Justice League movies, Kyle MacLachlan gets 4 lines as Superman. Lucy Lawless gets 3 lines as Wonder Woman. David Boreanaz gets like 6 lines as Hal, and Jeremy Sisto gets like a line as Batman. I mean, so it doesn't. I think in the long run, they could just take Kerry Russell, Nathan Fillion, Bruce Greenberg, Adam Baldwin, just put them in a goddamn movie together, and I think I would get a kick out of it if somebody was following them. I think it has to do with the fact that they really want to make autonomous projects, which is kind of stupid considering that every movie of the JLU they've done. The DC animated universe they've done since Superman Doomsday, you have to have a prior knowledge of the comic and the storyline to even understand what's happening. I mean, they don't even bother to tell you who – I mean, everybody knows who Superman is, but it takes you like a half hour to Superman Doomsday to figure out what Superman you're watching. You know what I mean? And the same thing with this. It took you a good 10 minutes to figure out who's on the team. Is that Wally or Barry? I mean, you know, does it matter that it's Wally or Barry? So
those are
gave up halfway trying to figure out which Flash that was supposed to be.
Well, it's definitely Wally because it's a JLU. So.
Of course, but I gave up halfway trying to figure it out.
As soon as I gave up, I figured it out.
Yeah. You want me to get?
Well, I actually did want to move on from, you know, from Green Lantern's lacklustre supporting role and, you know, and his small little supporting role in Crisis of Two Earths. His small cameo, but no, it's actually a supporting role. He actually showed more times than Alan Scott did in Absolute Justice. To his Future. It's actually a future film that's gonna be airing. It's actually gonna be coming out in
future
year.
His future film. Future.
Wow.
Future. Because
wow.
it's a future film in the future.
Hey. Moving from his lackluster supporting role in Crisis of Two Earths, let's actually focus on his future film. Let's actually focus on his future, which happens to be his upcoming future film and the latest draft of what would have been the final script for the Green Lantern film. Now, be aware that there may be a bit of spoilers, but we will try to keep that as minute as possible.
Well, before we get into the script, can we briefly talk about some of the other things that we've seen, just in case anybody who doesn't want to really hear about the script can kind of get this over with? You know,
so, like, Justice League, Justice League Unlimited?
No, I mean, like, the pre concept art we've seen and the casting that we know about and, you know, that Ryan Reynolds is, he looks 30, but he's actually, like, 40, and his love interest is 21, things like
that. Has the love interest even been cast yet?
Blake Lively, remember?
Blake Lively's playing here.
Blake Lively, I forget about that, actually.
It's easy to me that they cast Tim Robbins as Hector Hammond's dad, because, again, without spoiling too much, reading the script, he does have stuff to do, but it does seem kind of wasteful to get somebody who's, like,
more popular. Yeah, I thought that, too.
So, in all fairness,
somebody who's, like, what?
Casting, like, Christopher Nolan. Relatively known. I think they're casting like they cast Batman Begins and like they cast the original Superman. Even bit parts, even Pa Kent is going to be played by somebody who's like a multiple Academy Award winner, you know, and Ken Watanabe, you know, who got nominated for Academy Award the year before, plays the fake Ra's al Ghul for 4 or 5 seconds in the film. You know, everybody is somebody. So I think that's probably the same logical argument. But it does seem a little weird Anyway, I think, I mean, it's cool that they cast in Robinson stuff, but it's going to seem kind of awkward considering that. I mean, I guess they haven't cast anybody else yet. Are they using someone of Inuit or, I guess, I don't know if you're supposed to say Eskimo descent to play Tom?
That's the plan. Probably. We saw one guy, I forgot his name. We saw his screen test for the role.
Yeah.
He wasn't terrible, but, you know, he's the only guy, you know, I would know to play a role like that faithfully, skin-wise.
How do we feel about, though, it not being someone of that ethnic descent? I mean, in all fairness, if you're going to put an ethnic sidekick in there, regardless of if he's not called Pie Face, it's always going to seem kind of like a, whoa, boss, gotcha, gee, like, you know, like Jar Jar Binks or Chewbacca.
No, because, you know, Jimmy Olsen started out just like that. He started out as the kiss-ass kid who was always there. Well, no, he wasn't. No, he wasn't a victim of racism. But Tom is essentially Jimmy to Hal, and if he's not Eskimo, then he's not Eskimo. Tom isn't a breaking point, for at least not for me. I'll be okay if Tom is some little kid.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, I mean, reading the script, they don't really ethnicize them at all, which is cool. They don't call them Pie Face or whatever, which is cool. But, I mean, by the same argument, any of these characters could be any ethnicity. I mean, you get into that old argument where Michael Clark Duncan has played Kingpin as a black guy, and everybody got really up in arms about it, and it's like, well, who gives a shit? I mean, really, why can't Spider-Man be a black guy? You know, there's no reason that it can't, you know, be that way. I mean, it's just because at the time everybody was white when they were writing it, you know, so it doesn't really offend anybody. But I mean, I think the idea of taking someone that is a racist character and making them white to make them not racist anymore is kind of interesting. But I mean, it would be unfair, because then if you think about it, then nobody in the movie is of any ethnicity except for Tim Ray and Kilowog. So, but yeah,
and you argue that they're not any ethnicity except white, just looking different.
Yeah. I mean, well, anyway, so the casting, I guess, again, Ryan Reynolds is fine. He's a little he's effeminate, which I think is totally cool. I want to see Hal more effeminate. It kind of skeezes me that his love interest is like, you know, 14. And she doesn't seem like somebody who could be running an airline company. Did they cast her father yet?
No. If they did, it's not announced. He's got a bit part, though, doesn't he?
He doesn't have as many lines as, like, Tim Robbins, I guess, would, but maybe by one
isn't
less.
Isn't he gone by the time Hal's father died?
Well,
he's actually in the script.
Without ruining too much, he's in the climax of the script as the script is written, right, the last copy that we got of it. So he shows up at the end and he's involved.
We're talking about Carol's father.
Yes. Carl.
I don't remember that at all.
Well, it's probably because his name is Carl and her name is Carol, and if you're reading the script, you can't tell who's saying what. He doesn't have to make plans of dialogue.
That's probably it.
I like that his mother – I like that – okay, I guess we can get into the script if you want to do that. Just as whoever read it and wants to talk about it. I mean, how much?
Again, we have to keep in mind that this is, again, spoiler to anyone who has not read the script at all.
Yeah.
Or to anyone who doesn't want to hear about it, you might want to mute yourself here or, you know, want to turn off your speakers for a good probably like 20 minutes. So you're not ruined or the illusion of the great film when it comes out in 2011.
I'm gonna say
2020.
Yeah, I'm gonna say please don't stop listening. It's the podcast, you should listen. But yeah, all right. Well, I mean, I think that's what I'm saying about the I like that his mother is alive in the script and kind of like they have it that he's got like 70 brothers, and they really play up that angle that his mom is kind of like the domineering figure and he's kind of scared of his mom. I like that. I think that kind of grounds the character. And I think you don't see that in a lot of superhero movies. I mean, every superhero is like a loner and they've got that one person, their secretary / you know, reporter friend / old lady that lives on the farm with them that they kind of have feelings for, but you don't see the kind of large ensemble family that Hal does in the script. The way the script starts is good. I think it's pretty strong. I think they kind of beat around the bush getting the ring, and that's fine. I think
it does take a pretty long time for him to actually get that ring.
Yeah,
it takes kind of like half a night just for him to get the ring.
I just mean the specific context of the ring flying around the world, and that's cool with the cameos and stuff. But then how it like circles around him. I'm just tied into the iconic thing where he's in the simulator or in the plane, depending on which one you read, and it just grabs him and brings him over there. But structurally, where I don't like the script is that the story keeps stopping and starting, because as soon as he goes to Oa and he meets all these interesting, crazy characters. and he's talking about Legion, the most unstoppable force in the universe. Everything gets really interesting. I mean, twice as interesting as it was. The script keeps building and building and building in interest. And then Hal does the thing that every character in every movie with superpowers always does, where he has that scene where he doesn't think he's ready and he goes on and on about how he's not ready. With no context or understanding of why he's saying this, just starts saying, I'm not ready. You guys, I don't want the responsibility and blah, 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 even though the character, again, is the antithesis of this. And then goes back to Earth and then proceeds to have what I think is much less interesting encounters with several other characters. And then the whole bit with Legion where he goes, and then obviously, and then the script takes up again where he goes back and fights Legion again and then comes back to Earth and fights Hector again. I mean, it just seems like the whole Hector Hammond thing is a subplot where the Legion thing, it's like, you got a goddamn thing that's as big as a planet destroying like thousands of dudes flying around it. And the main villain of the movie is a dude with a head looks like a testicle in a wheelchair. I mean, that just doesn't seem as dynamic to me. I think the script has a flaw in that. I do like how they take Legion and they more or less transform it into kind of Parallax. I think that's kind of cool.
Yes, indeed, especially the fact that it pretty much, in, you know, words less said in the film, in the script, he is Parallax. He's just called Legion for some reason. Because he doesn't himself necessarily call itself Legion,
yeah.
If I'm right, in the film. Like, Abin Sur, for whatever reason, goes like, it is Legion, and it is alive.
Well, they, I think,
weird.
It's an extra storyline explanation of it, is that Legion is, the idea being that it's like the formation of all these different things
right.
coming together. It became Legion. Obviously, Legion has a biblical context, and it's based on Emerald Dawn.
It's based on Emerald Dawn, but it's in many ways Legion itself is more like it's more like the ambient sphere of the universe comes together
yeah.
and it then forms itself into one being, which is Legion, which is 1,000 bodies or whatever.
And again, we see the context of the story is that the main plot of the story is we barely see the Guardians, but we're told that they did this really shady thing a little while ago to the Legion entity, and that's why all this shit is happening, which is kind of like. Again, talking about they did in Brave and the Bold, and you see that often where, and currently in Blackest Night, where the Guardians are always kind of inherently evil, the idea that just because there's this force that believes in order and goodness, they must have done some shady shit in their history. Obviously, like the massacre of whatever and the Manhunters and blah, 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 blah. I mean, we've seen that a lot in the comics. So I think it's cool they stuck in the movie. I'm kind of miffed that they took out Legion's story from Emerald Dawn because I kind of like that story. I think that was a good science fiction story. But I do understand the idea of bringing it, trying to make it more contextual with Parallax. I also think it's interesting they bothered to write in the script that Hal's temper is going to turn gray. I don't think, even if Geoff Johns wasn't involved, obviously he'll take that out, but even if Geoff Johns wasn't involved, I can't imagine any producer in the world that's like, we're going to cast that hot young guy who looks amazing and we're going to give him gray hair. Fucking way is that going to happen? I mean, it'd be fine and cool, because to me that implies he's going to be evil by the second one and Kyle's going to have to come in and kick his ass, but... there's no fucking way that's going to happen.
Well, of course, during the course of the script, the second one will be Guy Gardner shows up and he's more like, it's like, Hal in some weird standoff.
Yeah, well, whatever to that. I mean, Gardner's an interesting character, but Gardner's an interesting character the same way that, like, Kilowog is an interesting character. I would love to see a Kilowog miniseries, but I bet you once I did, I'd be kind of upset about seeing too much of Kilowog, you know? And Guy Gardner's the same way. I mean, he's an interesting character, but too much focus on him is going to end up kind of, like, ruining what's interesting about the characters, that he's a foil, you know? I about the movie also, I think I want to talk about the romance scene a bit.
Hold on, before we get there,
yeah.
I just want to say that you mentioned stopping and starting, how
right.
it builds up, and then it switches to something else. I hated that. We had this great, hilarious intro to Hal Jordan. I love that. Then we
felt a sassy guy. He is.
Packing on sass. Yeah,
he's gonna be the one-liner that we have in comic. He's gonna be spitting one-liners.
Yeah,
all through the movie. That's fine. I like that. That's what Ryan Reynolds does.
Yeah.
But going to Oa and him doing absolutely nothing there.
He gives a great explanation of things, though. You know,
the idea being that the movie ends with the implication being like he's going to go to Oa and train, and that's fine. I just think it's like any Marines movie. Half the fun is seeing the guy in boot camp for at least a few minutes, you know.
Right.
And it's lame to me to be like, look at this, the most amazing. Cool, awesome space boot camp you've ever seen. Forget about that. Let's go back to the Earth with testicle guy. Like, I mean, like, what is this shit about testicle guy?
Yes.
It's not even Hammond that upsets me, because personally, I love the cast of Peter Sarsgaard as Hector Hammond.
Yeah,
but, and the fact that Hector is written fairly well in this. It's the...
He's got his own story, especially. Yeah, he has his own, like, plot, and that's pretty cool.
It's the idea that Hal is leaving all that behind, all that's on Oa. This is supposed to be a space epic, and we're going to space to see this giant planet full of different creatures, different stuff, and he just leaves. He doesn't even think about it when he gets back to Earth. First thing on his mind is fucking Carol.
Yeah, and then he does the air show thing, and then he spends like 2 days saving everybody's life all over the Earth and completely forgetting about the fact that Sinestro begged him to stop the biggest ass thing ever from destroying everything. Yeah.
And I love that it's intercut between the scripts. Like, you know what? I'm saving all these, you know, puppies and rainforests, delivering food to South Africa and all that stuff. Like, yo, it's great. At the same time, it intercuts with Sinestro going like, oh my god, giant evil!
Iolande is being eaten and shit. Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I'm glad I saved that balloon from going into the atmosphere. Yeah. I appreciate that we're going to see him doing some good deeds, because one of the things that pisses me off about Iron Man and certain superhero movies, I mean, Batman is the only one that really skirts around it, is that they never really fight too much crime. You know, like in a Spider-Man movie, you'll get one good scene where he's fighting some, you know, white carjackers who are like shooting at cops because they robbed a bank with a big money sign bag, and it's like, all right, fuck off, you know. And in Iron Man, he doesn't fight anything remotely close to crime, or I think he punches out some Arabic guys at one point. I guess that's the most we're going to get out of it, you know. But at least in this, we do see him doing shit that you'd expect him to do. I mean, it's like old school Superman the movie, you know, where we have a whole sequence where all he does is whip out his amazing ass powers and, you know, make his big gigantic Green Lantern cock and fix everything with it. Like, that's awesome. I think that there should be. But again, you're absolutely right that in the context of what's happening in the universe, it makes him seem like a selfish prick. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And especially because, like I said, the big battle with Legion happens. He goes into the friggin' again, spoiler alert, but you should have read Animal Dorn by now. But Dawn by now, it's your own fault. He goes into the friggin' battery, gets the ultimate battery power, you know, blasts Legion, saves the day, then goes back to Earth and deals with Hector, who kicks his ass worse than Legion does. I mean, that's just absurd.
It's the weirdest thing about that script is the fact that he defeats the biggest evil that kills four Green Lanterns. Or kind
of, like 40 at that point.
Yeah, to the point of that script, he kills at least 6 or 7 Green Lanterns, to be honest. And then he goes like, if I defeat this giant thing that kills this killing Green Lanterns left to right, will you help me save Earth? Sinestro goes, yeah, sure. Even though you should have helped me in the beginning.
I know, like, I'm the nice one, you dick. Yeah, yeah. I think, and the problem with the way the script is written too is that all the Green Lantern core storyline stuff is a little too abrupt. Sinestro is too quick to start talking about it. It reads kind of like a Geoff Johns script because he's too busy to talk about what his motivations are right up front. The Guardians are too quick to establish their motivations and then turn around, you know, and saying, all right, yeah, maybe we should use the fear energy. And stuff. It just seems like we needed more time with them. I think ideally, and this is going to seem like I don't want to beat a dead horse, but First Flight, I think, had the perfect story structure for a Green Lantern story. I think that movie was only about 70 minutes long. Take all the house stuff from the beginning of this script, plug it into the beginning of First Flight, and you have your perfect Green Lantern movie, I think.
No, I want to ask for, you know, the argument's sake. Colin, what did you think of the script when you actually, you know,
what you read?
I think the 8 to 10 pages I read were very interesting.
We read the best part of the script, I'll tell you that.
The whole appearance of Legion attacking, and for some reason he still ends up using the ship. I mean, he can't opt ever for the ring. It's always the ship. Like, I'm just randomly flying a ship.
I actually enjoyed the reason why he was flying the ship.
Yeah, yeah.
It actually makes more better sense. I'm just patrolling this sector of space in spaceship. Oh, crap, crash.
Yeah.
Or I'm delivering the prisoner.
Yep. No, I like it. I mean, I think I don't mind. I think, again, the iconic idea being that the Green Lantern guy flies the spaceship in and it crashes and it gets destroyed and Hal's brought to this. The idea being that he's a pilot in the prime of his life really enjoying himself and he's brought to this foreign pilot on this foreign plane that says, like, you know, the inherent moral of you needs to kind of come out here, and I think that's all really cool and iconic. And I would not like the origin if he didn't have the spaceship, you know.
Really?
I think I like the spaceship. I think the spaceship's cool.
It's rescued
the pilot. I think that's like the visual of him rescuing the pilot.
It's too deep in the missiles also. You know, besides, you know, Abin Sur crashes.
I'm not against it. I think Hal shows up, sees another pilot in danger, and it's iconic. I think it's like Batman's parents could be killed while they're watching the opera of Deflator Mouse from Batman Begins, but I don't really like it because it should be Mark of Zorro. I mean, that's just how I kind of feel.
The opera of Deflator Mouse?
Well, that's what they're watching, right? In Batman Begins, aren't they watching that?
Yeah, they're watching, you know, Deflator Mouse spinning around in weird
Cirque du Soleil Deflator Mouse. And it's like, it seems overly pretentious considering they fucking went to go see Mark of Zorro with Tyrone Power to get over yourself, you know? I mean, whatever.
I guess it's the Dragon Ball fan in me, but I've always pictured Avin falling from the sky and crash landing into a giant rock.
A crater.
And being perfectly fine. I mean, dying, but...
But then vanishing, yeah.
And then being found by an old Japanese man.
I will raise you as my own.
I'll call you Clark. Wait, no, that's stupid.
And he likes to see boobies, and his nose bleeds when he sees these boobies that he likes.
Yeah, again, the most interesting aspect for me for the script is also the fact that in the way it's written, I mean, sure, it's true. I do dislike the whole, you know, the stopping and the going and the stopping and the going for the Green Lantern, for most of the Green Lantern script. But it's the contrast between Hector Ahmad and Hal Jordan as characters in ways. In ways they're supposed to be, again, in the way it's written, in ways they're supposed to be, like, you know, again, the hero and the villain, one could have won this way, one could have gone that way.
Yeah, I would like to see more of that. Yeah, you're right.
You know, it's weird, you know, Hal Jordan's given the greatest power in the universe, and he decides to be a selfish prick about it and not do anything for half the movie. Hector Ahmad goes, I've been given the greatest power in the universe, I'm going to use it to more than likely mentally rape people.
Well, I think what's interesting, too, is the structure with the happens with the characters, because the same incident gives both of them their abilities. You know, and the both of them go on – the idea being they're supposed to go on the opposite spectrum. But because of Hal's story is so scattershot in the script and Hector's story is so straightforward, I mean, he does grimy shit, kills his dad, goes nuts. You know, whereas Hal is like he wants to get laid, then he wants to forget about it, then he wants to get his car back, then he wants to save the show, then he wants to be a superhero, then he wants to fight Legion, then he wants to – I mean, it's like it goes all over the place. It kind of muffs it a bit, especially considering just thematically where you're coming from. Hal's whole story is played by the fact that his dad died in this spectacular thing. And what does that really mean to him? Did my dad die as a hero? Like, does that really affect my life? Who am I as a person because of how my dad died? Why does it affect me this way versus how it affected my brothers this way? Blah, blah, blah. Whereas in Hector, again, is an only child whose dad hates him, and he actually kills his dad. So the one thing Hal would want, Hector takes away from himself. I mean, I feel like there's thematic ground you can dig up here. I mean, just I think the script kind of wastes it. Plus the whole scene where Hector kills his dad and his dad's like, you could read my mind, but not my heart. I'd be like, oh, fuck off, Dad. Like, bullshit to say. Like, I mean, how much, like, your heart was thinking that you love me, even though your mind was thinking he's a dick and I hope he was dead? Like, what fucking difference does it make if your heart was pumping the blood that loved me, you fucking
It's just so hilarious. I'm sorry. You may be able to read my mind, but not my heart. I have always loved. No, I've murdered my own father.
Not the worst thing in the script.
Those are your dying words. What lame ass crap is that?
And I liked, and the love scene is cool because every superhero movie since, especially since Superman and the helicopter and shit, and you can read my mind and the date and everything. But every superhero movie has to have that love scene, especially after Spider-Man, whatever. So the love scene in this is the part where Green Lantern and Carol are hanging out. She says she's always wanted to travel, but she's been kind of stuck down by her job. Carol, I think, is majorly underwritten in the script. She's like, oh, I always wanted to do stuff, but I was held down my job. But I always want to go to Paris. And he's like, well, here's Paris. And he makes it out of his ring. What's funny is I definitely thought he was going to fly her to Paris because he can do that. So instead, he just kind of makes her a facsimile of Paris. He's like, oh, yeah. She's like, open your eyes. She's like, I'm not in Paris. Oh, I guess
this
is the best nice thing, I guess.
A nice snow globe from Paris. That's awesome, I guess. Like, this is the
again, it's just so he can be in earshot radius of Tom to go, hey, there's trouble brewing. You better go save him.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Greenlander, stop making out with my boss, please. Yeah, I mean, it's cool. It actually is a cute bit. I mean, that actually makes sense. That does seem like something he could do. That's cool. And there does seem to be interesting stuff going on with the ring in this movie, and that's cool. I just happen to think it's kind of a logic gap.
I do think he makes too many giant hands, however.
Yeah, yeah. I do want to talk about the one thing in the script that I believe that everybody, if this is in the movie, and I believe with Geoff Johns it will probably stay in the movie, if this is in the movie and it stays in the movie and it's pretty much the last thing that happens in the script, that people will literally – throw up in hands.
Yeah,
this is the thing people will be talking about, this movie being shit for.
Well, but if this is the climax of the film, let me...
I'm not talking about the secret, like, who the... Not the secret character thing. I'm talking about the climax of the story with...
This is
a giant spoiler here.
Yeah, hold on.
Which may or may not actually be put into the film in its entirety.
Yeah.
But for the case of argument, Eric more than likely thinks that it's actually going to still be remaining in the film.
I think we should talk about it regardless.
So, again, this is a giant spoiler here.
All right. right before we talk about that, I just wanted to say that I disagree. I thought Carol had a decent role.
Yeah.
I think it's very important that they not get together in this film. So the essence of Hal Jordan that I generally enjoyed from the start of this movie is kept on throughout the potential next movie and the next movie. Because what we see at the beginning of the movie from Hal is what I like. That sassy, I'm going to do your girl and jump out your window, Hal, instead of the
domesticated.
Oh, this is Paris from my ring. How do you like that, Hal?
Well, I think, yeah, I think, now here's the deal. Every superhero movie has a specific child-to-man structure. The idea of the character in the film becomes, it's not just about becoming a superhero, the idea, it's just really obviously the open, obvious metaphor about the boy becoming the man, you know? Mm-hmm. And in terms of relationships and stuff, the way a lot of these romantic comedies play out and the way this movie seems to be taking the structure of childhood to manhood is that Hal is kind of like a reckless, kind of like sleep around playboy. And when he gets the ring, it finally teaches him like responsibility and blah, blah, blah. And that's what makes him able to kind of domesticate himself enough to settle down with Carol. Plus, I like the whole thing was, you know, I mean, there's a certain amount of entertainment value to a guy who's prickish and sleeps around. That's fine. I like the idea though that he, they try to ground his fear of commitment with Carol in like a legitimate, like, problem he has that she reminds him too much of what happened when his dad died. He blames her to some extent for when the dad died, and because of his dad dying, he can't really connect with anybody. I kind of like that.
I think you're looking a little deep into that. I don't think that's so present into the script.
You mean the whole childhood demand thing?
It's a general theme
of the movie itself.
You see that in Superman, you see that in Spider-Man.
The progression is there, definitely. His responsibility taking hold of him, that's there. I don't want to be with you because you remind me of my exploding father, not so much.
Well, they have – I'm only thinking of the one part. They have the part where they have dinner and she – and again, superhero movies are also – I mean the only way that – people who have like legitimately like creative theory, and the reason that something like Superman and Spider-Man are so popular is people can really read stuff out of the metaphors and the themes and stuff. And I feel like the scene where they go to dinner and he leaves dinner because his ring kind of acts up on him, and she sees that as like, okay, I can see you're not adult enough to kind of deal with this because of our history. Now, again, it's kind of stupid. She's obviously just misinterpreting what's happening, but there's also a certain level of like the movie, the ring, and the story for Hal is a metaphor for his. I mean, I hate to be like this. But a metaphor for his journey, quote unquote. So when she's saying like you were not ready for this, she's literally talking about the situation, and she's literally talking about she's talking about it. It's just not she's being kind of a roundabout, like not literally talking about what we think she's talking about. But she is saying like, you know, you're not ready for this reason, and you know the ring goofed off because of that. I mean, yeah, you are reading into it and stuff. I mean, I am reading into it and stuff. But I mean, I feel like that's like that's what they're trying to give us. You know, that's the same reason why Spider-Man loses his powers in Spider-Man 2. Why he becomes impotent, you know, because people don't respect him. It's ridiculous that you lose your genetically altered abilities because people don't like you. That's stupid. But that's like what the movie's about. And you accept that basic concept of the movie. You accept that when he's saying that, it's literally true. Like, I can't do anything because people don't like – I can't get it up because nobody's clapping for me. You know, and like that's like nobody's watching. So I can't pee while you're watching. You know, like that's what it's about. So
well, I think
but Hal does,
so
regardless of whatever, Hal does settle down with Carol by the end of the script.
Wait. Yeah. What was what's counterpoint?
I was just going to say that it's a lot more believable for Hal to be able to not get it up with his ring because it's emotional based.
Yeah, no, you're right. At least that's like makes sense as opposed to just losing my webbing. I can't jizz because nobody likes me. Like,
well, like actually.
But, okay, so getting back to the point.
Getting to the climax.
Getting to the point about the really,
I'd say getting to the climax.
Well, actually, yeah, because here's the problem. Okay, now here's the deal. The storyline, the script.
Can I say this right before
go.
To actually promote the climax? You know, make everything like put everything into sense. How goes? Because I love saying this part. How goes into this giant battle with Hector Hammond? You know, actually defeats Hector Hammond in some crazy logical way, even though he doesn't really defeat him in any sort of way.
It's like completely logical, but yes.
But he goes out where he does this stuff, is have goes, okay, now my ring is out of juice. I must now go save, you know, Carol, who's about to be, you know, who's about to like slam herself face first into a mountainside. So he jumps into a plane, ring not charged, flies half cocked, goes to Carol, you know, leaps out of his plane, gets Carol out of her giant death trap, and jumps off. In no way having a plan at all, and
in no way actually rescuing her. Yeah,
in no way actually rescuing her, and they're plummeting to their deaths. So
I'll decide how you die, motherfucker.
In his giant, drastic action, he does. He actually succeeds in making the situation worse.
Yeah. Now, what I think, and I think what happens after that is okay. Just to contextualize really quickly, the script does describe the Green Lantern energy as being the wellspring of all emotion.
And this great line by Sinestro, by the way.
Did he say something about that? Like, yeah, anyway. But he talks about the idea being the green energy is all emotion in the universe, and that's what they tap into. Blah, blah, blah. I think if you actually think about it, the fact that Will is making a decision, you can merely make an argument that the Green Lantern energy should be infinite because we're all making decisions every second. So if it's all tapping into our decisions, it should be infinite power, but I digress. Now with Geoff Johns' concept, it's not any – it's the emotion of making a decision. I don't know if my making a decision is an emotion, but I'm not even getting into that right now. But whatever. So what happens is Carol and Hal, as Hal's quote-unquote rescue, where he pulls her out of a plane going 70 million miles an hour, now is falling at 100 million miles an hour towards the ground, both about to die because Hal can't rescue them. They look at each other, realize that it's the last moment together, so they kiss. And this is cool because they kiss and they lose track of what's going on, obviously, because Hal is really good-looking, so I lose track too.
And we're Blake falling Light for 20 minutes. Underage,
so he probably is just excited that nobody gets to watch him do it, but so as he's falling to his death, now the power of their love for one another recharges the ring, and they gain the power to – and then he gets his power back and flies away. Ring fully recharged because he gets to make out with Carol. So logically speaking, he doesn't need to recite the oath.
Wait, let him explain.
He doesn't need to recite the oath. He doesn't need to get the battery. He doesn't need to go to Oa to fly into the battery to fight Legion. He just needs to make out with Blake Lively, and then he gets ultimate power.
Because
that's what the script inherently
does. Evidently, Hal Jordan is a Star Sapphire.
Yeah, well, the idea being that, the script obviously taps into the idea that every single emotional spectrum is in it, and that's fine. If not, you know, for the fact that it's completely dumb. I don't necessarily think it's the worst thing that's ever happened. I do think it's a thing that's going to break the movie. People are going to be like, oh, fuck you. Like, I can't imagine Geoff Johns is probably kicking himself. He didn't think of that first. I guarantee
you. More than
what?
It's not that big of a deal.
It isn't that big of a deal. You're right.
It's not as big of a deal, but more than likely, people will throw up their arms. Yeah,
I will throw up my hands, yeah.
As most Green Lantern cynics out there will more likely say, this is bullshit. Because I honestly said that, too, after I finished reading it, going, like, this is bullshit.
And then, to be honest,
Eric convinced me otherwise and actually agreed with this.
No, it seems like an episode of Heroes where, like, the rules can be made up in any second. It doesn't fucking matter. You know, like, Claire's blood can heal any injuries even if you're dead. Then why don't you go to a fucking hospital and help people? Like, you know, why bother to charge a ring? Why not just make out with people every couple minutes? That's fucking ridiculous. But whatever. That's what's going to break the movie for a lot of major people. But I think it's not going to ruin the movie. I didn't hate it. No, I don't hate it. I hate everything really hardcore. So it sounds like I hate it a lot. I didn't actually hate it that much. I rolled my eyes, but I was like, you know. It actually is kind of poignant and sweet, and the way they play it, where he gets the power back, turns into Green Lantern, and they're kind of floating before, and they do that before they even stop making out because they don't realize that that's happening, and that's kind of cool. I like that.
You'll see that Geoff Johns cut where Sinestro's on the corner, and he just like charges Ring from a distance. He's like, "You're welcome, bitch."
I think, I don't know. It's I don't necessarily like want him to be Training Day by the end of the movie. I don't mind that he's a good guy by the end of this movie, and he come bad guy in the next one. That's fine. That's cool. That really stretches it out. And I hate movies that plan for sequels, but this movie does stand enough on its own that you never would need to see a second one. But if there was a second one, I'd be interested in seeing. Was I the only one who read the script and the part where he suggested there was going to be a prequel for Abin Sur got actually more excited about the prequel for Abin Sur than any other sequel or prequel that they suggested in the script?
I thought the prequel was for Pike or whatever they call
Pike. They mentioned
for a sequel to actually Abin Sur.
When Hector Hammond's examining his body, he the screenwriter says maybe a prequel. It's like,
and he says, you know, Guy Gardner, see him in the sequel.
Yeah, I thought the Ab and Sur prequel, I don't know why that fucking makes me so excited. I don't really care much for Ab and Sur stories, but, like, for some reason, Magenta Alien busting ass all over the universe. I think that sounds...
That'll be pretty exciting. Bringing up the extra, you know, the mention of pipe to the giant again.
Well, that's yeah. That I think I want us to go on record as saying maybe that's one spoiler we shouldn't ruin.
Yeah. I guess if he is actually kept in the movie.
Yeah. I wouldn't actually mind if they cut that out. I wouldn't mind if they cut that out. At least if they cut out all the references to it and stuff. I think let the character.
I think it's
be in
pretty
there, but
important.
Don't. No, but that character could be in the movie. I just don't like what happens at the end of it being like. I think they could leave it more.
Well, the
subtle.
Dialogue would have to change like drastically.
Yeah, it's so overt.
It's like, so
to be honest, most of the dialogue can stay as it is, except for the last part.
Like, yeah. Oh, by the way, this is exactly who I am.
States it.
Wink, wink, nudge.
Yeah, and he says specifically, and then he's like, is that who you are? Yes, and let me tell you for another few paragraphs about my life and be more subtle, but not subtle. And this is who I am. It's like, all right, shut up.
Harken back to the climax of Hal.
The love sequence.
I loved it. When I read it, I loved it.
When he gets his powers back?
Or when he sneak out?
The fall.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
Everything that's leading up to the fall, or the fall, and then everything that leads after the fall.
I don't even remember what led to the fall. I just know
it's insane. Have caught the idea.
The fail rescue. Yeah.
No, the fall itself, I enjoy. The kiss, I enjoy. Maybe I'm just cheesy like that, but I enjoyed it. I don't think I'll be throwing up in my mouth when I see it. I don't think it'll be a deal breaker for anybody. I think they'll be invested enough in Hal, and they'll be invested enough in Carol that they'll say, "Well, that's nice." Or if they really want to be technical with it, they can say, "Oh, I guess he had a little bit of juice left in there after."
Oh no, I don't want to hear any of that fanboy like scraping for reason shit. No way. I want it known that it was love that brought the ring back, and I want that to stand on its own.
If you look at the script, then you'll say, "Oh, it was love that saved their ass, not Hal's will to live.
Not that 10% reserve power that usually kicks in when the Green Lantern's in mortal danger."
Oh, whatever, Frank. Let's not talk about Volume 2, okay?
I'll make sure that when I'm leaving the theater, that I tell everybody that, "Oh, I'm glad he had that last bit of energy in that one."
Don't you dare. Don't you dare facilitate this movie. Don't you dare enable this movie.
Wait. Mew apparently groans in anger. I want to know why.
Bugs Mew.
I don't know why, but it seems like every time Wes likes something is when I hit my rage, and vice versa. It's like the few things he likes, I'm like,
is this Earth 2 version of each other?
You guys are bipolar on the opposite wavelength, that's what it is.
He's my evil twin.
He's like not on your menstrual cycle at all.
So or are you the enjoy? Evil twin?
I'm the one who likes everything, he's the one who hates everything. He's
okay, but why do you hate this part?
It's just so damn cheesy.
Yeah, it's just too
cheesy. They could pick many better ways of doing the scene. I mean, they could have a last minute save by like one of the ally Green Lanterns who decided to keep an eye on the newbie who's playing around too much.
No. That'll take away from Hal.
It'll take away from the rescue, that's true.
Great rescue.
He used his SAR Sapphire powers.
You know what would be a nice replacement? If they got right before the fall, right before the ground, he just said, "Oh, I got you," and just land it.
I'm just fooling your luck.
Like,
no powers, just like just lands and makes a crater. I got you. What? Turns out I'm also Kryptonian. Don't worry.
It's like whoever said I ran out of charge. You were scared.
I mean, whatever. I think I figured he would actually rescue her as opposed to just pulling her out of the cockpit to die. I mean.
I expected something else completely.
What I think would be cool would actually, and this seems like completely contrary, but what would be cool is if right before he gets on the plane, he runs and grabs a parachute, and that's his plan. And then when they jump out of the plane, the parachute breaks, and then they have to do the whole love thing. Because then it would make it seem like he wasn't such a fucking asshole. Like, at least he tried, like, you know, as opposed to like, "Oh, fucking parachute, I feel like such an idiot. Anyway, bye." Like, I mean, like, really.
Tom standing by. Pipe is standing by. Throws the battery at him. tries to catch it and then misses. It's like, damn it, that was my last resort. And then
Tom brings out a big gigantic Eskimo pie. My mom's been making this for 3 years, and then puts it underneath. Also, there's a part.
Hi, Mrs. K.
This seems a bit weird because there's a part in the script where Hal goes and visits Tom, and it seems like he's visiting him at like 3 a.m. And the mom says, "I just made some cake. Would you like some?" That's a crazy ass thing to do. Make cake at 3 a.m.
I love the voice you make. I just made some cake. Do you want some cake?
It seems like a crazy thing to say. Okay. It seems like a crazy lady
voice. It's funny because the way the movie's also scripted, it seems that Tom and Hal have known each other since they were like adolescent.
Yeah. I mean, the movie's obviously written also to be like Transformers, where it's written in that kind of Michael Bay style, you know, where there's a lot of like fast jokes. Who cares if they make any kind of sense, you know?
Yeah, we were in a gang. I was all highball. He was pie face.
But then I remember to say this. I loved Hal's
His
wingman.
His wingman.
One is named Ion.
Yeah.
Ion, watch your six, and they get blown out of the sky.
And he's like, how about you, Torchbearer? Oh, how about you, Kyle Rayner? Oh, just that guy.
How about you? Just stay black. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
These call signs. Well, again, pretty much, again, as an overall, what did we think as a script in its entirety?
I liked it. I don't mind that it was so disjointed. I do. I wish it wasn't for the sake of the film. But I think when it's on DVD, I like the fact that I can skip to any half hour of the movie. It's a completely different movie. I wish there was more on Oa, but if I saw that as a movie as it is, I would like it.
On the door.
I think that most of it I love in theaters. For the script itself, it was pretty damn good. There are aspects that need to be changed, but for the most part, I really, really enjoyed it.
Let's get this guy writing the Green Lantern comic. Please.
He's doing Action Comics. Well, one of them is.
Well, wasn't it Michael Green?
It's Michael Green, Mark Guggenheim, and
some other hack.
Yeah. Some other guy.
And as I recall, Michael Green did a couple of issues. Yeah. Superman, Batman.
Yeah, you like
I believe
those.
Green.
And those are the issues I sort of enjoyed, even though they were as ridiculous as they were. And at the point I started saying, you know what, none of these issues alone can ever stand up in any sort of Superman or Batman continuity.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, Michael Green used to write for Heroes, so that's a strike against. Yes. But he wrote Joker's and Man-Man, the Batman
comic. He also wrote Kryptonite Bone Doomsday.
Yeah, well,
which,
I think...
With Superman, which Batman dubs, you just got punched by America.
But he wrote Joker's and Man-Man, the Batman confidential story, which is another Joker origin. I kind of like that, not for nothing. Kind of like
Berlanti, Greg Berlanti.
Oh yeah, he's like he gets around. And Mark Guggenheim used to write the. Mark Guggenheim's actually pretty cool because he likes he features characters and he likes to put them over. Like in his Wolverine run, it was all about how many people's asses can Wolverine kick. And the same thing with Blade, like his Blade run had every single Blade character show up in the storyline and get destroyed by Blade, like, you know, Gladiator and stuff like that. So I mean,
Gladiator,
but it should have.
So. Well, Mew, what do you think about the script?
What I read,
there are some good parts, I admit, and I do like some of it. Aside from one or two scenes that I personally wish someone would die in a fire for, other than that, it's pretty good.
Kuhan?
Like Mew, I only read like 8 to 10 pages, but those 8 to 10 pages were disjointed. I read like the last page and then like the 50th page and then...
Kuhan's like, unfortunately, I forgot how to read that.
I just
like a mystery book.
I just
just get to the last.
Choose your own adventure. I thought it was a choose your own adventure.
You went the wrong way. You die in a fire.
Go back. You went the wrong way. You forgot to charge last night. Now you're falling from a plane. I really just hope the soundtrack contains a song. It's the power of love, so they can play that at that point. You'll be like, it's the power of love. It's like, oh my god, my ring's charged.
Well, again, as I said before, I enjoyed the script. It's actually very good from what I actually thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And in script form. In script form, it's actually very good. I said this before. Hal Jordan is written as a sassy man.
Sass machine.
He's so much express. Everywhere. Oh my god. I'd be surprised if no one's like slipping on the floor from all that sass he's putting around.
I don't know whether he's coming.
But And I can hear Ryan Reynolds, you know, saying every single one of those one-liners.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I just can't picture him. Every time, I'm sorry, for every reason, every time I try to put him in my imagination as Green Lantern, it failed.
I think it's hard. The past, though.
That's the one thing I'm trying to also. Know. Yeah, that's the one thing I'm trying to also.
Yeah, I like to see the costume.
Try to understand how the costume's going to be. And what's
I like the concept art that we saw. I mean, all the concept art we've seen so far, which again, could be anything, could be nothing. All that we've seen so far, I've actually kind of been happy with, especially the one digital Kilowog. And I like the kind of the first couple of shots that they did the design work. I'm not really crazy if what we've seen as the Green Lantern costume is what there's going to be the Green Lantern costume when they first released the pictures. I'm not really crazy about it, but I mean, I'm really interested to see how it looks. I think that's really going to sell me on the movie or not, how it looks.
Because
Green Lantern's got one of the best costumes in superhero history.
Do they?
Well, no, I mean, in terms of how clean and how clear it is and the color and the way things are shaped. And before they started using this weird, like, puke green, back in Volume 3 when they're using a nice, cool, solid, dark green, and he wasn't. I mean, like, even having sleeves and shorts really seems to affect him, but I think they're really strong costumes and they can really come across very well in film and stuff, and just hopefully they don't do too much crazy shit with them. Would you guys prefer him to have a white eyes? Because I know they're not going to do that, but would you prefer white eyes?
No, it's Ryan Reynolds. I need to see some eyes.
I need to see some beautiful eyes.
I need to see his dreamy, dreamy eyes.
What color eyes does he have? Hazel? Probably Hazel. He's a gorgeous animal.
I don't disagree with you there, Eric.
Eric. It's like one of the most attractive gay men I've ever seen in my entire life, honestly.
Yeah, what were you trying to say?
Well, on the matter of the costume, I think that they need to do something that screams iconic, but does its own visual thing at the same time. You know, not deriving too much, but not being the exact same thing you just picture in your mind. In other words, being completely confusing.
For some reason, I feel if they use the current Green Lantern costume as the costume in the movie, Hal Jordan's current Green Lantern costume, in some fashion of it. Meaning that it cuts off right above the crotch, it's totally gonna throw me off. So that pretty much is the end for our segment of Green Lantern in media. I hope you enjoyed our talks of the highs and lows of the Green Lantern in certain aspects of television and movies, and for the upcoming Green Lantern film for mid-2011. I hope you look forward to it. All of us are actually looking very, very much forward to the movie when it actually comes out. Even though all through all our nitpickings, we're just fanboys at heart.
And even if it doesn't work out, we always have first flight.
And go on.
All right. So this past Tuesday, I believe, Kirby Crackle released their new album E for Everyone with their hit single Ring Capacity, which is our opening theme song, so you can finally get it legally without having to do weird stuff. So, Kirby Crackle, Ring Capacity, on their new album, E for Everyone. Everybody should check that out, KirbyCrackleMusic.com. Buy it, so you can support, you know, the people who give us that cool music. Everybody loves the cool music.
Get out, everybody! Be sure to visit thegreenlanterncore.com, where you can find the latest news, reviews, interviews on all things Green Lantern. While you're there, check out the message boards and interact with us and other friends. Be sure to send us any hate or love mail at the contact@glspotlight.com. You can also find our YouTube channels at youtube.com/glspotlight, youtube.com/neildevilbane, and youtube.com/kuhan. Not to mention, you can also follow half of the cast via Twitter at twitter.com/glspotlight, twitter.com/kuhan, and twitter.com/consciousb. Also, check out Ryan's blog at www.glspotlight.com.
Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps are properties of DC Comics and do not reflect the authenticity of this podcast.
Fell a thousand years ago, green fire, so hot. A carving and a man and a superman, and his name was Alan Scott. A man without fear, and that's for sure.